Hey, it's episode 23. I can't believe it already, of Two Girls Talking. I'm Katie Kiley from 97.1 The River in Atlanta, where Atlanta's classic hits. And Melissa Ruggieri is with me, the music critic from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, who also does the music scene blog on AJC.com. Two Girls Talking about Motley Crue today and The Dirt.
One of my favorite bands of the 80s, actually.
Is it really?
Yeah, I love them. Tommy Lee was one of my drumming idols when I started playing, because I started playing in around 83, 84. And I loved him. I loved his style. I loved the way he twirled his sticks, which I still do today mindlessly when I'm sitting at my desk and I have a drumstick near me. And I, you know, and then this the flash and razzle dazzle he brought to playing when they, you know, those later tours when he did the spinning thing or whatever.
Oh my God, upside down the drums and all that. It was crazy.
So yeah, no, I mean, you know, I remember going to see Motley Crue in 1987, the Hollywood Sportatorium, with a friend from high school and her dad, because my mother was not letting me go to that concert.
See, now you're going to see that we've got at least a decade of age between us. Because what really flashed for me on this was I was working. I had just graduated college here in Atlanta at Emory. And my brother invited me to move out to Southern California to try to get a job in radio. He was like, why don't you just come out here and sort of hit the streets? And it was in Ventura, California. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Southern California, but still a little ways away from the big city of L.A.
The Sunset Strip.
But I got a job at a radio station that went from top 40 to album-oriented rock, like really heavy rock. And it was one of the best things ever for me because I always loved rock and roll. I liked pretty heavy rock and roll. And Motley Crue came out. I still have an album that it has no label on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it had Livewire and Merry-Go-Round. And I'm trying to think of what else on it. It was like an EP,
like,
but it wasn't
Too Young to Fall in Love.
It was almost
just a
pressing, right? And I still have it from some guy that was in a rock band in Ventura that was like, you have to hear this band. So I sort of go, whew, back to the beginning, and watching this movie brought back this world of memories for me that were not all good. You know, it was because the 80s to me, just, it, you know, I have friends that's their favorite music, and I'm like, really?
Yeah, well, it depends on when you grew up. I mean, for me, those were my seminal years of listening and playing and just really getting into it. And MTV was such a huge part of my adolescence. So, yeah, to me, the 80s is my generation, but I get that.
And to me,
if
it was
not,
like, my hair will not get that big, and I'd have friends that were trying to tease it and spray it. And,
if you lived in South Florida, it would.
Man, I'm telling you.
You just need some humidity to go along with it. But no, I mean, and you know, I look back on it now, and of course I see the frivolity in it and just the shallowness of so much of it, but it was fun, and that's what I miss a lot. And you know, you see like a band like the Struts out there currently that kind of emulate a lot of like what Kiss did or Queen, and they bring that energy to it, and Motley Crue had that, and
just so crazy good.
But the movie itself, I mean, what did you think of it as a movie?
I thought, well, I wasn't sure. I put out a question on my Facebook page and on the River's Facebook page and said to people, have you watched it? Because I didn't watch it till last night. And what did you think? And the women seemed to love it. The women that grew up that are your age felt like Stacey Johnston. I loved it. It's my favorite genre of music. I read the book years ago and, of course, noticed some of the timeline was off.
Yeah.
But I just really enjoyed it. I was skeptical about the actors at first. She could see how Tommy and Nikki's guys looked like them, but she was impressed with how well all four of them captured Motley's demeanor, which I totally agree with. And she said, especially during the closing credits, which were my favorite part too, because they show a side-by-side of the actors and then the real band members. And she thought that was really cool, as did I. I went back and watched that again because I enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. I had some people that thought it was cheesily produced, but to me, that was the 80s. And a lot of people compared it to Bohemian Rhapsody. And I was like, well, you can't really compare it to that either, because it wasn't just the 80s. It was also the 70s. I thought it felt a little bit like that because you're watching these clothing, the hair, the guy makeup, all that stuff to me is just like, whoa, that's just so crazy that we used to think that was so great.
And they all looked like women. As you said, you were like, who's this pretty person?
I know. When Vince Neil, I interviewed him solo, and it was now when I realize when this was, it makes me realize what a space he must have been in.
Because it was right after his daughter died when he did his solo records, right. Not mentioned in the movie, by the way, the solo records.
That's right. They didn't mention that at all with Vince. But he comes into the studio with me, and he didn't have any makeup on. You know, usually they had their guy liner and all that stuff on. But so it was just him and me. And I looked at his album cover. I was like, who is this pretty girl on the cover? And he goes, that's me. And I was like, I mean, I looked up at him. And then, of course, then I could see the stubble and stuff. But I was like, oh, dude. You either have a problem or that's why everybody loves you so much. I didn't think Vince, the Vince in the movie, looked at all like Vince Neil, except kind of from the side and from far away. He reminded me more of Spicoli.
Yeah, he did. His name, by the way, is Daniel Weber, and he's an Australian actor. And he was
really?
In a Netflix series called The Punisher. You know, he's done other things. And he was also Lee Harvey Oswald in a miniseries that J.J. Abrams did in 2016.
I saw that.
So some people know who he is from...
As an actor.
As an actor from that. I thought he resembled Vince mostly when they recreated the Looks That Kill video. And they had
the
on...
The tons of
makeup and even his moves. And the stories I've read about the production of the movie, I mean, you know, these guys spent sort of like with Rami Malek and, you know, and Bohemian Rhapsody. I mean, they spent hours and hours and hours a day
studying their movements,
learning how to be rock stars. They also had a choreographer to teach them those moves that even though they're really just being, you know, rock guys on stage, the preening, the prancing, the where do you go with the microphone and just trying to emulate everything that Vince would do with his microphone. Interestingly, that is the actors performing and Daniel Weber singing in some of it, but also like Bohemian Rhapsody, it's a mix of Motley Crue stuff and some of what they did. I really think it's probably mostly Motley Crue stuff because it really does sound.
I kind of tried
like
to pay attention to that. Some of the music I didn't think the music was as effective as it was in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Right.
I love Dr. Feelgood. I thought that was great at the end. I liked their new song at the end,
The Dirt. The Dirt.
But some of the stuff, I don't know if it wasn't mixed. I don't know. It wasn't as.
I actually had a sound issue watching it, so I'm happy to hear you say that. I had to put the subtitles on because I couldn't hear them when they were speaking, but then when the music came on, it was really loud. And I don't know if it was a mixing issue on the Netflix side
or I
thought maybe it was either RTV or my hearing, but everything else sounded fine. And I at some point, about 10 minutes in, I'm like, okay, I can't make this any louder right now, so I'm just putting the subtitles on.
We'll just follow it around that way.
So, yeah, and, you know... I guess because with The Dirt, the story is so much about them and the debauchery and everything that, you know, went on, especially in those early years, because it ends around 1997.
They played for 20 more years.
No, they did not play for 20 more years. That's Melissa math. Whoever did that, that is like the wrong kind of math.
Well, that's where the timeline was off. Well,
the timeline was totally off because in 97, yes, they got back together. Tommy left the band in 99 and then they broke up again for several years. They did get back together in the early 2000s. But then in 2015, they signed the legally binding contract that they were never touring again. They were done. So even if you wanted to go from 97 to 2015, that
it
is
still
not
doesn't
20
work.
Years.
That's right. But I still didn't realize it was that long. It was still long.
Well, I think they realized very quickly that, you know, when Vince left the band and they brought in John Corabi, that album flopped. Like we've seen with so many bands. I mean, it's the chemistry that makes it what it is. And, you know, if Tommy Lee were to... And with those guys, they all really were characters. You know, even though Mick was the one who was sort of in the shadows... Even taking Mick Mars out of the band, you lose something, at least visually, you know, when you go to see them. And it's just not the same thing. So, you know, Vince had really...
He's a great guitar player. I mean, that's like, yeah.
But it's like, you know, Vince left to do his solo thing, never really took off.
Yep.
Tommy went and did a bunch of electronic stuff. I remember interviewing him back in like the late 90s, early 2000s about some projects he was working on. You know, I mean,
Nicky did heroin.
You know, so at some point you kind of go, if we're back together, we can make a whole lot more money and it could be fun and let's give the fans what they want. And, you know, I mean, I think that's what kind of brought them back together. But with the movie ending in 97, around that period, you do miss a lot of post-crew stuff.
Yeah, but I didn't feel like I read a couple more comments were like, it seemed like they really cut it off or they were rushed at the end. I didn't feel that. I really thought it was for an hour and 45 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
I was really, the whole time I was entertained, it was way sadder than I thought it was going to be. Now, I know that things happened that were sad, but there are things that happened that were sad that I didn't know about. So a lot of it, I felt sad, which really surprised me because even the funny things were kind of sad.
You know, Vince Neil especially had a really tragic life. You know, he killed his friend in a car wreck. I mean, how do you ever get over that?
Just that alone.
Yeah. And
I can remember how we all felt when that news came over. It was like, because you just thought, these guys are such blank-ups, you know? They're just living off the edge. They were just, everything was so crazy with them. I mean, really magnified.
Yes.
It wasn't even just like, we're just putting on this game.
Right.
This was just like, we are crazy when that car accident happened. But then you put it into a perspective where you actually see it on screen and see how it happened. That could have happened to any of us when we were that age.
Well, it's also not exactly the way the car crash happened either. It was more that he was speeding and hit a wet spot on the ground and then crashed head on into a car. It wasn't that he was having this nice casual conversation
I figured that, but still,
with the guy.
Even still that.
Oh, yeah,
it's like we've all...
Exactly. Although, and also, he was apparently way more drunk than he appeared in the film. Because in the film, it kind of looked like, you know, he may have had a buzz, he'd had a beer or two, whatever, and it's like, hey, we're gonna go get some more drink. I mean, in real, the real story is that, you know, he couldn't barely even stand up. They're like, Vince, what are you doing? Why are you getting in the car? And he's like, nah, I'm good, you know, and that kind of thing. So, and I remember when the sentence came down too, that it was so light that the, you know, there was a lot of, you know,
anger
about that too. Yeah. I mean, you know, you killed somebody in his own life, and having a little girl to go through what he had to go through with Skylar, and, you know, having her die. I think she was 4 years old, and you know, and that's depicted really well, I think, in the movie too. You really do feel his pain over
that. I thought
that
they did really well with that, because that could have been very maudlin.
Yeah.
And it was good, and it took a good actor to make you not go, oh my gosh. It was very well done.
And you know, it's funny, even though the guys didn't necessarily like look exactly like the guys, but I was kind of okay with that. So Colson Baker, whose other name is Machine Gun Kelly, he's a rapper, and he's been around since like the late 2000s. I mean, he's released several albums. He actually got in trouble here in Atlanta not that long ago. Last fall, his buddies got arrested for allegedly jumping an actor in Buckhead because the actor and Machine Gun Kelly had gotten into a fight earlier in the night.
This is like nothing unusual for Atlanta, I hate to say. That's the bummer.
So yeah.
Well, which guy was he? Who was he?
So Machine Gun Kelly, or Colson, he's Tommy Lee. And he was also in that series Roadies that I can't remember if we watched or not. Yeah.
Yeah.
He played one of the roadies or whatever. And he's built just like Tommy. So that definitely helped. And he's done, you know, a bit of acting over the years.
Yeah, he was very good.
He was really good. He also has, if you go online, he put up this really cool time lapse video that showed how long it took to the transformation. It was 4 hours of makeup every day for 4 months of filming because he has tattoos. So they had to give him 2 coats of body paint
to cover his
How weird
own.
Is that? Body paint.
Oh, that's so funny.
To completely take, you know, remove all of his tattoos. And then they had to pencil in all of Tommy's tattoos. And as we see, Tommy is a walking tattoo,
yes,
basically.
Yeah.
Every single day he had to go through this. And then, you know, the wig and everything else, because, you know, he's got really short blonde hair. And I thought he really captured Tommy's. Like, there's a sweetness to Tommy. Like, he's so.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
He's so goofy, and he did do some awful things, but yet he seems so easy to forgive just because of his personality. And I thought,
well, then
that,
you realize he comes from this great family. That's funny, and that's
the Cleavers,
very sweet.
The Greek Cleavers,
yes,
is pretty much what they were.
And when they meet fiance that just had sex
groupie.
With Nikki Sixx, yeah, I mean that was very funny.
Yeah,
I mean,
no,
it's like, yeah,
it was. And you know, I think he said, you know, his character said in the beginning of the movie that he's just a hopeless romantic, and I think that is true, because, you know, all the cheating that he did with, you know, Heather Locklear, you know, she's in the movie. Pamela Anderson, not in this movie at all. It's like she didn't even exist.
But it was before her time, right?
I actually can't remember when.
That girl that played Heather Locklear had her mannerisms down perfect. I was blown away.
She really looked like Heather Locklear. Yeah. And that's sort of, I understand also what the person who made that comment about it sort of ending quickly, wrapping up quickly, meant, because there were some things, like, you know, when Heather catches him cheating and then like she's just gone. And you're sort of like, okay, surely he cheated before this and you knew about it.
There was no way to, it would be a
5-hour movie.
Yes.
And I felt the same way about Bohemian Rhapsody. I mean, I felt like the first hour of that movie just went by way too fast. And it was like, hi, we've met. Oh, we have a platinum album, you know? And I understand that for time reasons, you know, you have to do that. Even though Netflix, you probably have more leeway, you still don't need to make a 3-hour movie about Motley Crue.
That's right. That's
nobody needs to see that. So, I mean, and when there's so much to, you know, to get in there. But the scene of Tommy in the hotel room where he talked about what his day was like, like waking up at 5 in the afternoon, chained to the bed because his manager would handcuff him because he couldn't remember anything he did the night before. That whole just like destroying hotel rooms thing, I've never understood that.
I know. I mean, even there, I didn't understand
it. I've certainly been very drunk in my life. I'm sure you have as well. I want to go to sleep. I have never walked into a room.
Yes, I did not walk into a hotel and go, I'm going to pick up the TV and throw it in the corner.
I'm going to throw everything that's on this dresser onto the floor and light something on fire. I mean, that just never crossed my mind. And I'm sure there are other substances involved, not just alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, they're
Doc
out of their minds,
McGee, but I met Doc McGee several times over the years.
Yeah.
And it's funny because the guy that played him, do you know his name? Because he's in Billions, which on Showtime, is that on Showtime?
Yes.
He is a great actor.
Yes, he's a character actor,
really good character.
In many things.
But I loved him in this. I thought he was really, Doc McGee really saved these guys.
He really did, until they fired him. And then they fired him because Nikki did not want to meet his mother again. And, that was a tricky relationship. I read an interview with him recently where he said, you know, he did have regrets when his mom died, that he had never really fully reconciled with her. And You know, I mean, you do, like you say, I mean, there is a sadness to so much of their lives and what they had to go through, even as kids, you know, some of, like Nikki, you know, before even turning into Motley Crue. But the guy who played Nikki, I thought he was really good. His name is Douglas Booth.
Ha, ha, ha.
He's English. He played Boy George in a BBC film a couple of years ago about Boy George, because he's very pretty. He has very pretty features.
Oh, he's really, yeah. And well, so does Nikki.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I thought he brought a lot of soul to Nikki's character. And, you know, you're watching this guy shooting up, which I couldn't watch. I'm not a needle person. Every time I saw that needle, I was like, nope, nope.
Yeah, that was
But I mean,
really
it was just so sad to see what he devolved into. And that became, like he said, that was his true love. I mean, it wasn't even the music or the fame or the band or anything.
It was drugs.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he was the one that I knew the least about, yeah. Which I can see why you would keep all that stuff very private. But when I remember when they had already made it big and they came into a radio station I used to work at, and I, you know, when you have the four of them sitting across from you that you're trying to interview, I was like, I felt like Little Red Riding Hood. I was just like, my eyes were like, and it was, they were just not, most of them weren't into it.
Really?
But Nikki, like, totally, totally connected with me, you know, was looking at me and realized that this is going to be your heart. He was so kind.
Yeah.
And just so nice and answered questions and then the other guys. And then I just was like, well, then I'm not going to talk to the rest of you either. And
yeah.
But I always have this sort of soft place in my heart for him. I've met him many times over the years and really liked him. All the guys are really nice.
They
you
are
know,
really
that's
nice.
Kind of funny.
I've interviewed them all except for Mick. I've never talked to Mick. He's just a quiet guy. And yeah, and talking to them a few times over the years, they are. Tommy is just very hyper and very, very excitable about everything. And, you know, Nikki and Vince were much more serious about whatever it is, you know, that we were talking about at the time.
And Mick, to learn so much about Mick is really cool. I didn't realize he was kind of the older protector and the
and he wasn't going to take any crap from any of these kids in the beginning, which, you know, and I believe the real story with that was that he didn't like the original lead. So there was a singer before Vince too. It was a guy named Odin, and he's, you know, not in the movie, but and also getting Vince to join the band wasn't really as simple as going to a backyard party and saying, hey man, come join our band. It took like a lot more time than that to convince him to join. But Mick didn't like the first lead singer, and you know, I guess because he was more experienced the guy who played him, he's a Welsh actor. His name is Ewan Rheon, and he is in Game of Thrones. People probably know him as Ramsay Bolton. I don't watch Game of Thrones, but
either.
I've been hearing that, you know, since the movie was announced, that, oh my god, the guy from Game of Thrones is in. But and he's also a singer-songwriter, so he and Machine Gun Kelly actually have musical experience.
So that's why they, yeah.
Yeah, the other two guys, no, not, but they do now. But Ewan, he was so quiet. Mick was so quiet, but yet every time he was on screen, whether it was like to break the fourth wall and, you know, make a snarky comment or something, he just brought this presence to every scene that he was in just by sitting there.
Yes.
Really. And apparently when the band did get back together in the early 2000s, the hip surgery that he has in the movie, it's kind of depicted as, hey, Mick got a new hip. All right, we're good. Let's go.
Right. Yeah. But he has a degenerative, terrible
disease.
Yeah,
he has this horrible disease. And when Nikki went to go see him in the early 2000s to try and get everybody back together, he apparently like could barely move. He couldn't play the guitar. He had a beard that had grown down his chest. And it took a lot of rehab, you know, physically for him to get back in shape to be able to even go out on the road and play. Because, yeah, I mean, what an awful thing to have been diagnosed with as a teenager, a young man.
Yeah.
And to live with that your whole life in that lifestyle. And he also wasn't quite the saint that.
No, well, no, they did. They made him look like not. He drank a lot too.
Well, not just that. He liked the women as well. You know, I mean,
I was going to say, well, I don't remember being attracted to him as much as the other guys.
No, no. But you know, when they were young, I mean, he had a look, and that's what I mean. It's like when saying before, it's like the four of them just each brought something so distinctive that when you take one out of the equation, it just never worked. And
that's the way it is. Know. It's kind of like, look at Van Halen now. I would love to see a Van Halen one. Would be fun to see, because there's a lot of drama there too. But even they made some reference to it, like it can be done and work, but it's so seldom that can work.
Right.
And if somebody dies, maybe it works then, because there's no other way to do it.
Exactly.
But
people accept
to have
it
somebody still living and doing it is another. But that'd be like if Pink Floyd married, although you couldn't, you know, now you've had Death in the Band. But right. still, when you think of Roger and David Gilmour, mm-hmm. wow, that would be like a big get together. If those guys could all pull sure. it together for a reunion, they could do it.
I know. And you're right. It does happen so seldom that Van Halen really was such an anomaly that they had such success with Sammy Hagar.
And then they took a guy that already, I love Sammy solo. So
yeah. Bands have tried to do that. When Queen brought in Paul Rogers,
right.
you know, it was fine. They went out on the road and everybody,
but not that,
you know, thought it was okay. But yeah, I mean, but again, that's a Death thing too. So you can't really ever replace that person. And people tend to be a little more accepting of a replacement when someone has died because there's no choice if you want the band to go on.
Well, like Steve Perry and Journey, there's another one right there. I'm so glad I saw Arnel mm-hmm. Pineda with them. Mm-hmm. I kind of had boycotted doing that. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. But when I actually saw them, when I had to see another show with a bunch of different bands in it, I was like, this is awesome. Because if Steve Perry is determined not to go back with that band,
right.
this is the closest you're going to get. And I don't think they could have found another person nope. that's that good.
And the thing is, sometimes when you get somebody younger, they have the energy And you know, who's to say that Steve Perry would be able to carry out a full tour?
Right.
And
I have a feeling there's something there that we don't know about that he's not. That's why he's not doing it.
Yeah. And I mean, there are a lot of bands like that, you know, either somebody's left or somebody has died and they've decided whether to, you know, get back together or not. But I think it was really cool when Motley Crue signed that 2015 We're Never Touring Again thing, legally binding, because we've talked about so many times all these bands that say it's their farewell tour.
And then they're almost back.
Speaking of Ozzy, by the way, we can't talk about the Dirt without mentioning
my friend Mark Cooper was like, he goes, I got there till the Ozzy scene and he said he had to quit watching it. It was a total waste of time for him, he thought. And I was like, oh,
it wasn't, you know, I did have to look away.
It's a really bad. It's like those things that you, like, if you didn't know the story about the bat on stage with Ozzy, you wouldn't believe it, right? You wouldn't believe somebody would be so gross.
Right.
And this was like one of those stories that I must have known at some point, but I forgot about.
I knew about it from the book, but you know, I read the Dirt, you know, when it came out, so I don't remember it that vividly, you know,
because it's something you try to forget.
Yeah, and reading stories about the Dirt, I was reminded of it. So it's just gross. I mean, we'll just leave it at that.
It's
if you haven't seen it,
really,
yet.
It's like one of the gross things that like you would never have thought of in your whole life.
No. And again, how many different types of drugs do you need to be on to even think about doing it? I mean.
But that was part of the sadness of it to me, too, because I do remember being a young adult, mm-hmm. young, like in my early 20s and throughout my 20s, because the 70s was my growing up mm-hmm. phase. Right. Mm-hmm. But so I was actually in that scene. It wasn't like I was a bystander. I was in it.
Right.
And it was parts of it were really ugly. I don't like groupies.
Right.
I mean, it makes me feel sad that women
sure.
are just doing whatever these guys want them to do
right.
and being used. And I know some people that did that back then, and they're just fine telling the stories about it.
Yeah.
But to me, some of it is just really dark and pretty amazed those guys got through it.
And so many women, that's just what they wanted to do.
They put
themselves in those positions because they thought, I want to be able to say I slept with so-and-so or whatever. And it was kind of a skeevy time.
Yeah.
And of course, it still goes on now, but... You know, you don't hear about rock bands as much anymore now. This everything's turned so much to pop and rap that you kind of wonder with the backstage. You know, whenever I've been backstage recently, and our friend Peter Conlon from Live Nation will always say this, it's really the most boring place to be. It's like that's where the lawyers hang out. And it's true. I mean, there's really nothing going on except, you know, maybe a tray of celery and carrots.
It is funny, cooler. And you can tell even back then when you see some of the scenes where they're meeting with the public and stuff, they don't enjoy that.
No.
I mean, they really don't.
Right.
So, you know, you pose for your picture, whatever, and it's done. But to have any kind of, like, here I am sitting here saying I had to interview them, and Nikki Sixx and I had a connection for 15 minutes.
Right.
You know, but the thing is it's really these guys, that's just to them, that's the worst part of what they do.
It's all work.
Working.
I mean, the stage part is fun. Like, you know, Tommy waking up at 5 o'clock and basically doing nothing for 3 hours except drinking and getting himself ready to go on stage at 9 and, you know, doing
that
his drum solo
great.
And then starting the cycle all over again. I mean, you know, and when you spend that much time on the road and you're young and you have money and you have access to anything you want, well, I still don't understand why you'd burn down a hotel room. Well, not burn down a hotel room,
funny.
But, you know,
I think some of those Led Zeppelin stories are even crazier when you hear about Bonzo and they were
Absolutely.
Throwing stuff in the pool and all that. Motley Crue did a little bit, but not quite as much. Question for you.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think, if you're going to compare this to the book, if you were like I and you hadn't read the book yet, would you say to people to read the book first or to see the movie? Because I'm glad I saw the movie first, I think. And is it worth reading the book after you
It's worth reading the book afterward because there's so much more in the book. And the book goes into a lot more detail about things, well, good and bad. But I just remembered reading the book and I couldn't put it down. You know, when I finally finished it, you just kind of have to take a deep breath and go, whew, man, that is just one crazy story. The movie, I think, does a good job of, you know, showcasing the craziness to an extent. Yep. But I think you would enjoy the book now after watching the movie.
Okay.
Because you'll get those other layers of things that they had to leave out, like we were saying. It can only be, you know, but so long. So
if you haven't read the book yet, yeah. And if you're Motley Crue, it's not even just, you don't have to be a Motley Crue fan. It's kind of like the Queen movie in the fact that if you love that band, you're going to love, I think, seeing this because you just are a fan. And so anything that you kind of eat it up.
And you already know a lot of these things in their history.
Yeah,
you know about
Nikki's
heroin abuse. You know about Vince losing his child. You know, I mean, these are things that fans already knew. So it wasn't like spoiler alert.
Right. I really thought it was good. I got a kick out of it. I was more sad than I thought I was going to be about it. But I thought they did a great job. I thought the quality was great. I thought the actors were phenomenal. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend it for sure.
It's definitely worth an hour and 45 minutes of your time. I'll say that. And definitely watch those end credits because they are a hoot.
they're very special. Yeah. They're just very special. And that brought back the happy times. Seeing live shows for me has always been one of my favorite things. And to be able to have seen them many times before.
Yeah.
Although they've done some crazy. You're jumping out and getting in fights. That was just great. That to me is fun and funny.
I know. And you know, and all four guys were producers on the film. So you know that there's nothing in there that they didn't want in there, but it was cool to see the footage at the end where, you know, you see them in the room with the actors, you know, just kind of all interacting and having fun, I guess.
And the fact that they wrote a couple of new songs for this and that they're now saying, well, we didn't sign an agreement not to do new music. So there will be some more Motley Crue, I have a feeling, because they are all still here and they seem to be in a good place. So.
And they probably could play a show or two live if they wanted to. I mean, the thing they signed said they weren't going to tour. Never said they weren't going to play live, I don't think, but I guess it would depend on Mick. Mick is probably the biggest factor in how well he could still play. So,
and did you feel? What did you think about it?
I thought it was good. I thought because I had read the book, I was probably expecting a little bit more out of it, and I had that same feeling that I did with Bohemian Rhapsody, which is like, well, this timeline is not really the timeline.
Yeah, if you're somebody that,
because I am a fan, you know, and I did follow them from the time Shout at the Devil came out, and you know, the first album, Too Fast for Love. And I felt it lacked a little bit, but that wasn't the fault of the act. I thought the actors were all really good. And aside from the sound mixing issue that
see if you noticed that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I thought the quality of the movie, I don't think it seemed chintzy. And a few people commented, they thought it didn't seem like the same quality of like Bohemian Rhapsody. But I didn't compare it so much. Let's talk about just for a second that Netflix is now this huge competitor with network TV, with
HBO,
movie studios.
Which, you know, yeah.
Netflix has got so much money now that they can do whatever they want.
Right.
And that's hence that movie, Roma or whatever, was nominated for Best Picture. It was never in a movie theater. It was only on Netflix.
No, actually, it was briefly.
It was in a movie theater because that's the only way you can show it on
eligible.
TV. Right?
Right?
Yeah. But it wasn't like a release that you would have to go see in the movie theater. So Netflix, I don't think, if you noticed quality stuff that wasn't as good as Bohemian Rhapsody, I would think that was more
intentional.
I think it's the cheesy 80s, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, too. But even though Netflix does have so much money, I also don't know if they're going to give a movie, you know, a $80 million budget or something. I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody, but who knows that? I actually don't know what the budget was on that. I'm sure it was close to $100
million.
Because
of those live music scenes, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, that's a much more grandiose production.
Yes.
And this was a little more scaled down because I think it focused on the people more than the music, whereas Queen was sort of equal parts Queen's legacy as a band and Freddie Mercury as a person. So
I agree with that, but I don't think that was because it was being cheaper.
No,
I just think that's
I think it was the look.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was.
And I liked it. I was just fine with it.
I think it fit because, you know, if you did see this really nice, glossy, slick production, I'm not sure that would actually fit Motley Crue because it is called The Dirt.
That's right. Doesn't fit that big hair and those shoulder pads, those awful clothes. The clothes are the thing that I'm like, please, let's not ever go back to that stuff. Although I had some friends. Things that I loved a lot.
Yeah, I had some things that I never need to see again. Also, although I hear Neon's making a comeback this year. So
I love
like,
Neon.
I've got some Frankie Goes to Frankie Says Yes or whatever those shirts were in my drawer somewhere.
Oh my God.
And some Wham things that had a lot of neon on it. But you know, these guys were more the black leather pants or white leather pants in Vince Neil's case.
Oh my God,
and
that was funny.
Yeah,
was
and you know, that was never a look that was ever going to fit my body type. Let's put it that way. So I don't miss it, and I'm good with it never making a comeback. check either.
Well, I love the fact that these biopics are coming. They can go on and on and on as far as I'm concerned. It's kind of like, to me, it's better than most things that come out nowadays because it's real drama.
Well,
it's
when they do it well. Yes. You know, and I'm looking forward to the Elton John one for sure. And
I don't like that person's voice, whoever's
doing it. It is different. Bad. I mean, but they are doing something different with that, and that they're not using Elton's songs. I mean, they are using the actors'
songs. I saw a preview
songs.
For it like 3 months ago, and I went, oh my, no.
I didn't,
bothered me.
It wasn't that I disliked it. I just kind of went, oh, okay, well, that's going to be different.
Well,
and
we'll
have to get used to that. But
it's going to be a great story.
But he does resemble him physically. And, you know, and yeah, and talk about somebody else who has just a crazy story and lived through many things.
It
and
makes you realize there's a reason why these people make it somehow, because there must be this desperation or this so intentional, right? That that if you grow up with a great life, it's like you're not always
right. You're not driven to prove anything or to get out of anything, and that's what so many of these people, you know, have had to do. They wanted to escape their situation, and music was that outlet.
Yeah, you know? It's great, and it's so sad at the same time. And I thought that this movie depicted it perfectly.
Unless you're Tommy Lee, and you already
you have a normal family. He got the girl that he said this might be the one I let get away.
Right.
It's like, yeah, dude. Although she's got her own issues,
yeah,
doesn't she?
I know.
Oh, I love
I
Heather Locklear, and it's like, girl, get it together.
I know.
But anyway, we'd love to know what you think. You can always go to our Facebook page. That's kind of easy. Two Girls Talking, the number two, Girls Talking. Comment on it.
Or our Gmail account, twogirlstalking11, number two, number 11, @gmail.com. And let us know what you thought of the movie, because I'm sure many of you have seen it by now. And if you haven't, it will be there.
We think it's worth it.
Yeah,
so
totally.
We enjoyed it. And we'll look forward to talking to you again next week. Thanks for being with us.